We've been trekking through the Old Testament looking at characters, and we spent some time looking at a number of different characters, and we kind of got to David, and we've been stuck there, and we're going to stay there for a while, because he's just a phenomenal man. There's so much writing about him that we couldn't just give him 1 week. And last week, Greg preached an amazing sermon about the relationship between David and Jonathan. And Jonathan was incredible, where he could have been kind of an enemy of David, and he could have been jealous of David because David kind of took his authority or took his heir to the throne. Jonathan supported him and served him and honored him, and it was just such an amazing sermon. So I'd encourage you to download that. And this week, we're early on into David's rule. So he's kind of just become king, and previously to the chapter we're going to read, there's epic battle stories. The Philistines get wind that David is now king, and so they are attacking him wave after wave. And God is speaking to David, and he says, look, they're going to attack you like this, from this angle, like this. You need to go around and get them like this. And David was responsive to that, and he went and he defeated them, and he became extremely victorious and a great king really, really early on. And then we get to this chapter. Now, R.C. Sproul comments about this particular text we're going to read, and he says that this is one of the most difficult and one of the most offensive passages of the Old Testament. So I said, thanks, Greg. But the goal this morning, and I believe the intention of the text, is to show us three things. Firstly, that as a people of God and as a culture generally, we don't quite fully understand and see the holiness of God. Much like Isaiah, he had that moment that Jason was speaking about where he suddenly saw how high and above everything else that we know God is. He's holier than we can ever imagine. And we get so used to it and so accustomed to God that we forget that he is just so incredibly far and above and beyond us. He is so incredibly holy. So we don't see the height of God's holiness. And at the same time, we neglect the depth of our sin. We know that we're not necessarily good, but we often forget that we are actually sinful. And sin isn't just stuff that we should have done that we didn't do, or stuff that we shouldn't do that we did. Sin is rebellion against God, the creator of the universe. And so we don't appropriately see the height of God's holiness and the depth of our sin. And when we see that, we see this huge gap. But when we see this huge gap, what that shows us then is the incredible breadth of the grace that we see in Jesus Christ. And so the goal this morning is to increase the height of God's holiness in our mind, to understand the extreme depth of our sin, all for the purpose and for the glory of seeing God's incredible grace to us through Jesus Christ. So with all that in mind, let's have a read. 2 Samuel chapter 6, 1 to 15. David again gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. And David arose and went with all the people who were with him from Baal Judah to bring up from there the Ark of God, which is called by the name of the Lord of hosts, who sits enthroned on the cherubim. And they carried the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. And Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, were driving the new cart with the Ark of God, and Ahio went before the Ark. And David and all the house of Israel were celebrating before the Lord with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals. And when they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah put out his hand to the Ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen stumbled, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God struck him down there because of his error, and he died there beside the Ark of God. And David was angry because the Lord had broken out against Uzzah, and that place is called Perez Uzzah to this day. David was afraid of the Lord that day, and he said, How can the ark of the Lord come to me? So David was not willing to take the ark of the Lord into the city of David, but David took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. And the ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite 3 months, and the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. And it was told King David, the Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the ark of God. So David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the ark of the Lord had gone 6 steps, he sacrificed an ox and a fattened animal. And David danced before the Lord with all his might, and David was wearing a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the horn. We're going to approach the scene this morning kind of through 4 lenses, as it were. Now, firstly, we're going to address the ark explained. We're going to look at the ark experienced. We're going to look at the ark rejected. And lastly, the ark accepted. The ark explained. What was the ark of the covenant? Most significantly, we need to understand that this was the ultimate in Old Testament and Old Covenant symbols. This was the height. This was the most important artifact that they had. It was kept in the most holy places in the temple. It was the ultimate, most important thing. It was basically a wooden box overlaid in gold, 1.1 meters long, 0.7 meters wide, and 0.7 meters high, fully overlaid in gold. It had rings on the sides, on the corners, so that you could put poles through that were also overlaid in gold, and those poles were used to carry it. Then on top, it had a golden slab, and that was known as the atonement seat or the mercy seat, where once a year they would sprinkle blood, the sacrifice of animals for the atonement of the sin of the people. And next to the slab, there were 2 cherubims overlooking the slab. Now, cherubim is a statue of an animal that kind of had like a lion's body with wings and the face of a man. And these cherubims were looking over the mercy seat in awe and wonder, kind of praying over it. So there was this cool-looking box. And it's important to understand at this point in time where it was. So this is the most significant artifact to the Jews. It symbolized God. And what happened was the Philistines had stolen it and taken it. And they took it and they marched it into their temple. And they're like, we are so mighty. Our gods are so great. We're going to make fun of this ark of their God. Ha, ha, ha. It came into their temple and devastation just hit them. Until eventually, like, we don't want this thing anymore. So they sent it straight back to the Jews. And eventually, the ark ended up with Abinadab. And it sat there for 20 years. Saul made a kind of plan to go and fetch it, but never really got there. But the ark had been away from the people for 20 years. Why was it so significant? Because David, early on in his rule, he says, you know, he's been victorious, he's doing really, really great. And I believe under the inspiration of God, he decides, no, it's time to finally bring the ark of God back. But why was it so significant to the people? And essentially, it's because it represented 4 things to the Jews. Firstly, it represented rulership. The ark of the covenant was known as the footstool of God. The Ark of the Covenant was a symbol that this was God's nation. He was their king. He was their ruler. He's large and in charge. And the Ark of the Covenant symbolized that, God's rulership. Secondly, it symbolized reconciliation. On it was the mercy seat. When they viewed or they knew the Ark of the Covenant was with them, they knew that there was reconciliation where that Ark was. Once a year, blood was sprinkled on their behalf to reconcile the sinful Israelites to a holy and just God. And so they saw that as reconciliation. Thirdly, they saw it as revelation, because inside the ark were kept the stone tablets where God commanded the will of his will to his people on how they should live. But most significantly, the ark symbolized the presence of God. We read in Numbers 10 that when they were moving the ark of God into battle with the people, the presence of God was clear and it was visible by cloud. They knew that where the ark was, there God physically was. If we could be near the ark, that's where we would be near God. The ark was kept in the most holy place, and only one person once a year would be able to go into that place after he's made sacrifice for his sins. Why? Because it's the most holy place. That's where God's presence dwelt. The Ark of the Covenant, the Ark is extremely valuable and significant to the Jews. So what's happening now is there's this huge celebration. It's like a party. It's just pandemonium. Everybody's dancing and shouting and singing, and they're just so excited. The Ark is returning. It's like a national celebration. When I was preparing this, I was remembering 2007. I think it was 2007. I was in first year varsity at UCT in Res, and we won the World Cup rugby. SA won, and it was just incredible. I remember sitting in my Res, and after we were celebrating, I got home. It was about 12:30. I remember looking out the window, and there was a guy running down the street, painted from top to toe green, naked, just running, going, "Ah!" He was just so stoked. And I remember the streets were just full of people celebrating. It was like a national celebration. This is what's happening in Israel. This is what's happening. They're celebrating because the Ark of God is finally returning. Yes, it's this awesome, awesome moment. And they're there, and they're dancing, and they're partying. And as the Ark is making its way through, they're like, "Wow, yeah, it's coming, and it's coming." And as it gets to the threshing floor, the oxen, as it's pulling up, it stumbles. And so it kind of kicks into slow motion. And what happens is the Ark is like, it's falling. And Uzzah, who's in charge of moving the Ark, his immediate response is, "No, I can't let it fall." So everybody's like, "Oh, it's falling. Oh no, it's falling." And then he sticks out his hand and he grabs it and he lifts it and he puts it back up, and everybody's like, "Phew, yes." And all of a sudden, bah, gah, Uzzah is struck dead. And so the people, they've just gone from extreme celebration, like, "Yeah, this is the most awesome moment," to just radical shock and fear. Devastation. What has happened? It was going to fall, and he stopped it from falling, and now he's dead. What's happening? The most incredible anticlimax you can ever experience. In fact, it's so incredible that some people think, no, the only theory to explain this is the heart attack theory. So what happened was Uzzah, he was responsible for this ark, and he knew how important it was. And so as it was falling, his heart rate went like, and as it was falling, as he stopped it, he lifted up his heart, he had a heart attack and died. He just fell over and he died. But that's not what happened, because we see in verse 7, it's clear. In verse 7 says, "And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and it was God who struck him down there." Radical. What on earth is happening? Huge celebration to immense devastation. The ark experienced. Next, the ark rejected. David's response to God is, he's upset and he's angry and he's confused. He doesn't know what's happening. He's like, "God, why have you done this? Uzzah's a good guy. I know Uzzah. He's part of my team. I told him to move the ark. He's working for me. He's not an enemy. He's not like the bad guy. Why did you strike him down?" He's so upset. He's like, "I don't want anything to do with this ark. It was amazing. I was going to go fetch it for you, God, to bring you glory. But now I want nothing to do with it. I'm just going to leave it there." And he kind of just ditches it at this house of this guy. What's his name? Obed-Edom. He's just like, "I don't want it. You can have it." And he's angry. And then because he's a king, he gets to name places. That's probably one of the coolest things about being a king. So he names the place Perez Uzzah. And that means outbreak against Uzzah. David was like, "This is just an outrageous outbreak. What are you doing? This is just not what's happening? This is an outbreak. God was just crazy and he just let loose I don't like that. And he's angry and upset. And in order to answer that question of why David responded like that, we need to know, well, was God just, and why did he strike Uzzah down? Why did he lash out so outrageously? And there's two answers basically to that. The first one is an obvious law-breaking answer. And the second one is that Uzzah's heart and attitude was the main issue. Because, I mean, Uzzah was part of the sons of Abinadab, the family that were looking after the ark. And it was their whole life, their role was to look after the ark. And so Uzzah, his whole life would have grown up, this is how you look after the ark, this is how you treat it, this is how you transport it, this is what you need to do. And it's clear, we can read it in Numbers 4 and 7, that there were set rules that were attached to the ark. The first one was, no cart. If you're going to move it, you carry it. You don't use a cart. They wrote that. Second rule was no looking. You don't look at the ark of God because it's God and he's there. You can't look at him. You're not holy enough. Previously on, early on in time, 70 people looked at the ark while it was being moved with the Philistines and they all died. So he knows. No cart, no looking. And thirdly, no touching. He knew that. God had warned, if you do these three things, I will strike you down. And what we see in this passage is simply God being true to his word. He's not acting out or he's not being different. He's being faithful to what he has already proclaimed. That's the first obvious reason. Secondly, we need to kind of look, well, why Uzzah? Why did he take the fall? I'm sure there were people, I mean, his brother, for instance, Ahio, he was also moving it on a cart. And I'm sure people, you know, may have touched it as they were celebrating, as it was going past. People may have looked upon it, but why did Uzzah then and there, why did he take the fall? Three things about Uzzah. Firstly, I believe that he didn't see the holiness of God. Verse 7 says, God struck him down there because of his error. The NIV says, instead of error, it says because of his irreverent act. Uzzah, for that moment in time, he failed to see the difference between him and God. And he failed to see just how much holier and set apart God is to him. I titled this kind of the awelessness of commonality. He knew the ark. He was around the ark. He looked after the ark. And because it was so common, he didn't have that awe about the ark. And we can do the same. We're in God's presence. We're worshiping him. We're in his scriptures. We spend time with him. And so easily we can forget about the difference between God and us. He didn't see the holiness of God. Secondly, he didn't see his own sin. As the ark was falling, his immediate response was, oh no, I can't let the ark of God get contaminated by the dirty floor. And so he thinks, I must put my hand in the way to stop it and to bring it back up. But Uzzah didn't realize his hand and he himself is more defiling to the ark of God than the creation that God made. It was his sin that caused it. He didn't see the difference again between him and God. Scripture is clear. All men have fallen short of the glory of God. He didn't see his sin. He just thought, you know, I've done some bad, but I'm not rebellious to God. I'm not an enemy of God. No, he was. He didn't see that. Lastly, about Uzzah is that he tried to bridge the gap. There was the ark of God, and then there was him. And he figured he's just going to bridge the gap by his own good works. You know, his intentions were good. I'm going to do a good thing here, and I'm going to bridge. You know, I don't want it to fall. This is a good intention. My motives are good. I'm going to bridge this gap between God and me. But we can't bridge the gap between any other way than the plan that God has given us. And back then, the plan was the sacrificial system. He was able to bridge that gap between God because the sacrifice made on his behalf once a year by the high priest. You can't bridge the gap, Uzzah, with your own goodness and your own works. You can't bridge that gap. The gospel is our method of bridging that gap. And the moment that we're like Uzzah and we try and do something or be good and earn something to try and bridge that gap between ourselves and God, even though our intentions are good, we are defiling the gospel. We can't do it on our own works. Uzzah couldn't just touch God's ark. It wasn't how it worked. He couldn't just bridge the gap. God is holy. He was sinful and he couldn't do anything about it. It's the same with us. God is holy. We are sinful and we can't do anything about it. We need to bridge the gap, and the gap cannot be bridged by our own works. So yes, God was completely just in what he did. Why was David so angry? Why was he so angry that God lashed out? David distorted mercy and grace, essentially. Because what had happened was previously God had been giving him so much grace and mercy, and people had been sinning, but God had been giving them grace, and David grew to demand it and expect it. R.C. Sproul gives a great illustration, and he's a lecturer or teacher, and you know, it's the last semester, and he says to his class, "Okay, guys, we've got an assignment due in 2 weeks, and this is what it's about. Thank you." And they go, and they come back, and this time 40% of the class hasn't finished the assignments. They come to him, and they stress. "Yo, sir, prof, we're so sorry. Look, all this stuff just happened, and we tried our best, but the internet went down, and my dog, you know, computer, we really tried our best. Please just give us an extension. We hand it in first thing tomorrow morning. We're so sorry, prof, so sorry." So he extended a bit of grace and says, "Okay, you know, no problem. Take it. You can hand it in tomorrow. There's no problem." Second assignment was due the middle of the term. This time, like 50% of the class comes and says, sir, we haven't been able to get our assignment done. We worked hard, but it just didn't happen. Can we maybe hand it in tomorrow afternoon?" So he hummed and yawed and he extended a bit of grace once more. He said, "Okay, but this is the last time, guys. Next time, you need to give it on time. Please, you need to hand in your assignments on time." End of the term comes, end of the semester comes, final assignment. 60% of the class casually walk up to him and say, "Sir, I haven't finished my assignment. We were celebrating last night, and I'll hand it in tomorrow. Okay, is that fine?" He said, "No, it's not okay. Naught. And I'm going to take off marks on the previous assignments." And what happened was that they were given a little bit of grace and they were shown a little bit of mercy, and then a little bit more, until they eventually began to expect it, and then they began to demand it. And so that's what happened with David. He had been shown a little bit of grace, a little bit of mercy from God, and eventually he was like, "God, how can you just strike him down? Where's your grace? I thought you were a loving God. I thought you were kind and caring and compassionate. What's happening?" See, the problem with our culture at the moment and our world is that we very easily grasp the concept that God is love and his peace and his grace and his joy, and that's true. But a holistic view, the full view of God's holiness is, yes, his love and his grace and his peace, but he's also just. And he has anger and he has wrath and he's righteous, which means he hates sin. David began to expect and demand grace from God. Secondly, David was trading and bartering with God. The deal was, you know, "God, for your glory, I'm going to go and fetch the ark and we're going to worship it and you're going to get praise. But then you bless me and keep giving me victory in battle and make me this awesome king." And this thing happens and Uzzah is struck down and David says, "God, what are you doing? This wasn't part of the deal. I went and I fetched your ark for you, for goodness sake. What's happening?" He's bargaining and he's trading with God. And this wasn't part of his deal. See, the problem with trading and bartering is it either results in pride or in anger. So either it's you're successful and you get blessed and you know you're blessed because you fulfilled part of your bargain, or you get angry because you feel like you've been wronged because you did your part but God didn't do his. We can't distort God's mercy and grace, and we can't trade with God. So lastly, the ark accepted. Obed-Edom, the dude that just ended up with the ark at his house. One day he's sitting there playing cards, probably a pretty chilled guy, you know, a bit glum, life's a bit tough. All of a sudden, stuff is just happening. He is just stoked. blessings are coming. His crops are growing. He's got money. He's got wisdom. The chick's like, oh, Obed Edom, you're beautiful. And he's like, yeah, things are just styling. He's all of a sudden sporty and good looking. And his family is happy. Like, yeah, they're just cruising. It's just awesome. He's like, yeah, this is great. In fact, it's so awesome that news of little Obed Edom, who we didn't know he was, spread throughout the whole of Israel until eventually it got to King David. And like, dude, this guy's blessed because he put the Ark of the Covenant there. So David goes back and they fetch it. But then what's amazing is this time around, David carries the Ark and he does this responsibly. They're carrying it, not on a cart. And then what they do is every six steps, they sacrificed an ox and a fattened animal. And they sacrificed that ox. Why? As a symbol to show the difference between them and God. They're carrying the ark of God. So they stop and they say, look, we're not worthy. God is holy. We are sinful. Sacrifice. Next six steps. We are not worthy. God is holy. Sacrifice. Next six steps. All the way. What an amazing response and change around by David. What happened? Sometimes when we get exposure to God's anger, God's wrath, and God's justice, we get upset and we get angry and we kind of think, well, God, why didn't you give us goodness? This isn't according to my plan. And we get upset with God and we get hurt. God, you can't do this. God, what's happening? David says, God, what's happening? Stands back and realizes, actually, I don't deserve any of God's grace. God is up there. I'm down here. Everything I have is by the grace of God. I don't deserve any of it. So who am I to expect it? And he has this change around. And I believe the change around, you can see a little bit of it in verse 9. It says, and David was afraid of the Lord that day. And he said, how can the ark of the Lord come to me? The ark of our holy God, how can it come to me? I'm not worthy. This is King David saying that. So he discerns the gap. He sees this gap. And he kind of asks, well, how am I going to bridge the gap? And he bridges it well. So to conclude Covenant Grace, I want to point out, firstly, that the ark, it points us straight to Jesus. Because in Jesus, we find our ruler. We find our great king. In Jesus, we find reconciliation once and for all. In Jesus, we find the true and final revelation of God. In Jesus, we see God's love for us. We see God's justice and penalty and payment of sin. And in Jesus, we can experience the presence of God. They couldn't look or touch the ark of God. We can experience him. We can enter his presence through the blood of Jesus. Lastly, we need to realize that Jesus is our greater Uzzah. Uzzah was struck down because of sin. Struck down because he tried to bridge the gap. Jesus bridged the gap. But he too was struck down. Not because of his sin, but because of ours. And so it's amazing and it's incredible that such a holy God would give so much grace and love and mercy to us, such sinful people, all because of the incredible breadth of Jesus' love for us. It's incredible covenant grace. He was struck down for us so that we could experience the grace of God. So don't take this grace for granted and don't try and trade with God. Don't try and earn this on your own thing. Don't try and make deals with God. Accept the grace and give him the glory. Don't be numbed to the awesomeness of who God is. And don't be deceived to the depth of our sin. Instead, be awakened to the love of Christ and the work that he's done on our behalf. The gap has been bridged. That gap has been made to nothing because of Jesus. We don't deserve it. We didn't earn it. But he's bridged that gap. And our responsibility now is to live for him. Live as though that gap has been bridged. Live as people saved by grace. That includes our money, our time, our energy, our talents, our gifts, everything. Our worship, our dreams, our desires. Guys, the gap has been bridged. We could never hope and dream for that, but it's been done free of charge as a gift to us by the only God. It's incredible. And I believe our call this morning is that we need to live as though that gap has been bridged. Amen. Let's pray as the worship team.